Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that promises that bag of white granules is protein powder. It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop, available in your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those early perks. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's exactly as African as Mads Mikkelsen. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen. And there are guests in control and guests who you listen to, and he is a guest you listen to. It's John Paula, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo! Oh, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you, man.
Likewise.
We are going to chat about, as you may have picked up from the clues, Mufasa, The Lion King, and Carry on Netflix. We're going to talk about those two movies today.
You always make those little clues and hints at the beginning of the show, but I do wonder, for those that pick them up, I know explicitly which movies we were reviewing because I just watched them this week. And yet I'm still like, wait, what is he referring to here? It's only a 50-50 shot and I'm still sometimes lost. So
I do play that game every single time. I'm like, okay, so which movie is he referencing here? Okay, now I know. Okay, so that means the next reference, so I got to pick it up. It's like a little fun game we get to play at the beginning of each episode.
I could take that as a compliment or a non-compliment.
As a compliment.
But I, being me, will absolutely take that as a compliment. I that's just what I revert to. Everybody's telling me good things about myself. So,
I like it. It's a good little brain teaser to kick us off.
Yeah. It's definitely fun.
I always have fun, thinking of stuff that happens in the movie and how we could reference. The Mads Mikkelsen thing cracked me. Like, I was just, why is Mads Mikkelsen in Africa? But yeah. I mean, Denmark,
well, Africa. He had about as much, right to be in that as Seth Rogen did, so.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I think, like classic Disney cinema, we need a villain with an accent, and Mads is close enough to English, so he's in.
There you go.
Well, we'll get to all that eventually. We're going to do best ever African movies, speaking of Africa. And those are movies that take place mostly in Africa. Not every single second has to be in Africa. But most of it should be. But we start with The Buried Treasure. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? John Paula, what do you got?
Put me right on the spot straight away. I have a TV show recommendation for both of you. I think you'll like it. My wife and I loved this new show called The Rivals, which is based on an old series of romance novels from the 1980s, which is where the show is set, in England in the mid-80s, and it's about a small local TV station and all of the interpersonal drama of the rich people that have a stake in it and the people on air, the people that watch it. And it feels a bit like a modern, very horny soap opera. There is at least 12 or 14 characters, and they're all trying to sleep with each other or gain power or gain access. And it's about the sort of machinations that rules this little hamlet in like the countryside of England in the 80s. The needle drops are great. I think all the dialogue is really sharp, really fast. And getting a glimpse into a time and place that we don't usually see in any type of media, I was like, I don't know anything about how local TV and regional broadcast work in England in the 80s. It's a totally new space for me. And like kind of seeing all of the behind the scenes of that and these characters and watching them navigate affairs and betrayals and things. It was really good. And it was a big surprise that my wife was the one who wanted to watch. I'm like, sure, I'll give you a few hours of my time. And of course, I was the one by the end asking if we could just binge the next two while we had a free night. And huge fan of it. It's on Disney Plus. It just came out, I want to say, October of 2024. So, and they've already been greenlit for a second season. So that is also real. I love when a show you have, you know, some hope that you're going to get resolution to it. Because if it was canceled outright, I'm so disinterested. If there's no possible.
It's much harder.
It really is.
You didn't, unless I missed it, you didn't mention the biggest selling point for me, which is David Tennant David is Tennant. In the show.
David Tennant's in it, yeah.
And that's what I was looking at.
Man has made no mistakes, as far as I can tell, in television. I even think Good Omens is great.
Not only is David in it, he plays like the most perfect, just like crap eating grin,
mustache kind of, twirling.
He's not even. I don't even want to characterize him as a villain because he isn't really. But he's kind of a. He's also not an anti-hero either. But he's built up in a way where you kind of understand his position, and he slowly kind of digs his heels into that. And by the end, you're kind of like, oh, I love this guy, but he can't win.
His name is Lord Baddington. Like, he's the villain. This is not. This is not up for debate. He is the villain of this show, but he is really fun to watch.
He's really good at it, and there's so many great peripheral performances around him. He's not even, I would say, the lead or the second lead. There's a lot of other characters that take the spotlight, but all these individual stories, like any good soap opera, I think it's the culmination of all of them and how they finally sort of crisscross and intersect at the very end is what makes it all worthwhile. But big fan of Rivals.
I'll mention it again. I clearly have watched the show as well. I will mention it again just because you almost expect on, you know, any kind of television, a level of sex, nudity, language, you know, that kind of stuff. But there are some shows where I feel like you need just a little bit of extra preparation. And this is one of those shows because there is a lot of sex in this show, a lot of nudity in this show. You know, for some, that's a faster click. For some, that's an ever click. I don't know. You're you. I am the former.
I am a proud member of the faster click club.
That you want to be a proud member of the faster click club, but feel free to continue.
I was going to say, definitely a lot of nudity. I mentioned a very horny show, like sex is behind every decision every character makes. And it's fun though.
It's 5-minute sex montages.
Yeah.
Legitimately. It is that kind of show. So, but it is funny. It is clever. It is like,
and it revels in that like 80s excess.
Exactly. It's got that real kind of time and vibe to it. You mentioned the needle drops are great. Yeah. It's definitely worth a watch, in my opinion. I've watched it on Hulu. It's funny to say that's on Disney Plus. It is technically on Disney Plus, but it's funny now to say shows like that are hanging out on Disney Plus. But there you go. Andrew, what do you got?
I'm going to go with another television show. This one is on Max. I'm going to go with Dune Prophecy. I am really enjoying this show so far through the first four episodes. I'm a huge fan of Denis' version of the Dune world, and I feel like this is a great companion piece to that story. The show takes place thousands and thousands of years before Paul Atreides is even born. It follows the Reverend Mothers at the time and a new foe that they must defeat while at the same time trying to hold on to the power that they worked so hard to gain in the cosmos. I think this is incredibly cast show. Everyone is delivering on that front. The performances are great. I want to give a shout out to Emily Watson and Travis Fimmel. Both are doing amazing work. I fell in love with Travis Fimmel's kind of quirky, weird kind of craziness in Vikings. I thought that was a pretty fun role for him. It's kind of the same thing here, but it works for the character that he's portraying. So if he's a character actor, then this is great. Emily Watson just holds a lot of power in this role. She commands the room every single time she's in it. Yeah, the visual effects and the cinematography are stunning. There's just a lot of good things to say about the show. Have either of you picked it up?
I'm glad somebody likes this show. You are the first person I've met who has good things to say about this show, including myself. But I'm glad that you are enjoying it. I am bored out of my skull. The only thing I like about it is Travis Fimmel. I think he's amazing. I really like him. I'm the only person that liked Raised by Wolves, so I have that in my corner, and he's in Raised by Wolves, and is amazing there.
You're not the only one. I like Raised by Wolves too.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. There's two of us then. Yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying this show, and at risk of yucking your yum, I will stay quiet.
<It's> all good. I love the two or all three Dune. I don't love David Lynch's. What am I saying? I love the two Dune movies.
The Denis, by
Denis Villeneuve, and I am definitely excited to check out this show. So I'm glad to hear one of you liked it. And Andrew, thank you for clarifying. I don't know much about it other than the show exists and it's out and it's streaming now every week. I wasn't even sure if it was in the same continuity or if it was just so many thousands of years. It might as well be completely removed.
It's 10,000 years before the movies. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is just to give you an understanding of how the Reverend Mothers came into power across the cosmos.
Yeah, it's an origin story for the Bene Gesserit, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
So there's a 50% recommendation for this show.
Good enough.
I also started watching something, and we're kind of going all television for the buried treasure this week. But I started watching Colin from Accounts. Are you guys familiar with Colin from Accounts?
No.
I will be in 2 seconds.
This is on Paramount Plus. I don't think the accents feel Australian or New Zealand, you know, somewhere in that range for me. But I'm not going to spoil the title of the show, but I will just say it sounds like an office sitcom kind of. It is not that. It is definitely not that. The show's title is kind of genius and clever and fun, and I'm not going to spoil it for you. You'll know why it's called Colin from Accounts by the end of the first episode. This is one of those where I kind of just say watch the first episode because you'll know all you need to know as to whether or not you're going to enjoy this ride, and I heavily suspect you will. This show is hilarious and is some of the most fun relational writing I've heard in a while. It's really, really good. So just fire it up on Paramount Plus, give yourself a half hour to watch that first episode, and I think you'll be hooked, honestly. Colin from Accounts. I mention it because season 2 just dropped on Paramount Plus. So season 1, just what, 8 to 10 episodes, something like that, half hour each. It's not a huge investment, and you'll, I think, enjoy the time. So
it's on Paramount? I didn't know this was in the Yellowstone universe. Those are the only shows I ever hear about people talking about on Paramount anymore.
I watch Paramount all the time. Survivor's on Paramount. Big Brother's on Paramount.
All the Star Treks.
Star Treks are on Paramount Plus. Yeah. Yeah, they just finished up a new season of Lower Decks. Yeah, right, I'm on Paramount Plus all the time.
Maybe the last season.
And I've never watched an ounce of Yellowstone, so. Colin from Accounts, if you want to check that out. It has possibly my favorite comedic pilot cold open of all time.
Oh my gosh, that is so you're really selling this first episode then. At the very least, I owe you that first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that is on Paramount Plus. The Rivals is on Hulu, Disney Plus, wherever you want to watch it. And Max is on Dune. Dune Prophecy is on Max. And just because I call it Dune Narcolepsy doesn't mean that you can't still enjoy it.
Prophecies while they sleep.
That is true. That is true. That happens. All right, let's get into the big dig. Let's talk Mufasa, the Lion King.
It's time I tell you a story. A story of a cub, not much bigger than you.
So just to be clear, we're not in this story?
There's a lot of stories with all of us. Tell one of those.
Long before they became legends, Mufasa and the prince who would come to be known as Scar became brothers.
Hello, what What's your name?
Mufasa.
I told you to wait for me.
We can't just leave him here.
Rules are rules, Tucker. The king will never accept a stray.
I'm not a stray. I'm just lost.
Told in flashbacks, Mufasa is an orphaned cub lost and alone until he meets a sympathetic lion named Taka, the heir to a royal bloodline. The chance meeting sets in motion a journey of misfits searching for their destiny and working together to evade a threatening and deadly foe. This, of course, Barry Jenkins bringing us the sequel to the reanimating. I don't know. I have a weird thing calling it live action.
2019 Lion King.
Animated.
Yeah, whatever. The differently animated version of The Lion King. This follows that up with a lot of the same voice talent that you saw in that, but going kind of prequel by way of, storytelling. So what did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, why don't you kick us off?
I did not like it.
Did not like it. Jonathan?
I just got out of the movie like 10 minutes before we started recording, so I'm still processing my thoughts. I am on the fence right now. I'll say I'm on like the right in the middle, like low side. I liked it. Yeah, right in the middle.
Okay.
I am in the low side of didn't like it.
Actually, let me correct that. I'll say high side of it was just okay.
High side of it was just okay.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're the one who's going to start with this, because apparently. It sounds like Aaron hates this one.
I didn't know. That's a category that I did not choose. Not choose hate.
You got very close to hating this movie.
Give in to your feelings, Aaron.
I can feel your hate.
So, yeah, you kick us off. What are some of your general thoughts, John?
First and foremost, I just appreciate that we're getting a new story. In this quote-unquote universe. We've had other sequels before. There's Lion King 1.5, there's Lion King 2, there's the Lion Guard TV show. And I like a lot of those things. They're all pretty good. I've watched some with my kids, and they're decent. They're not The Lion King, which is high watermark of perhaps all of Disney animated films. They're up there with Beauty and the Beast, I think, is probably one of the best animated films ever, full stop, at least Western animation. And the photoreal sequel from 2019, I think, left a lot of us feeling kind of cold and indifferent. Like, what is the point? Why did you do this? It just feels like a bad bastardization of what we used to love. This at least was like, all right, here's, you're taking that concept and at least going in a different direction. It's not a super original story. And the framing device of someone, generational storytelling, is not particularly novel either. But I like that they included Timon and Pumbaa. They had a lot of laughs with my family. And I thought the animation looked gorgeous. There were some shots in the snow that looked as good as anything since Avatar. And I think the characters kind of worked. I think the adventure aspects and the action set pieces were really exciting. But I didn't care much for the music. And I think in a Lion King film, that is a big, kind of big swing and a miss not to have like great music or great musical numbers. And truthfully, I think they could have just done without it completely and just done a straight non-musical film, and I would have been probably better entertained.
Andrew?
I disagree with a couple of the things you brought up, but I do agree with the fact that you brought up the visuals are impressive, even if I do think that this realistic art style hinders performances in the movie.
It's a weird place. It's like this uncanny valley, but like, when they were talking, it's like, that's weird. But whenever they weren't talking and they were like jumping and whatever, like, oh, that looks kind of like a real lion in real danger. And there's some legitimately photoreal, incredible. And also, I love that they had, I think deliberately to make it stand out from like, say, a nature documentary, all of the camera moves were up close and they were dynamic and they were moving. The shots you could never get with a real lion. You can't get a dolly follow through the grass weeds of a real lion because you'd be eaten. You'd be right next to it. So I kind of appreciated that they did some dynamic camera placement. But anyway, continue, please.
Yeah. Well, to build off of that, this movie has the same problem that I think the 2019 film did. And that's when it comes to animals, cartoon animation will always be superior to realistic art styles because trying to put a human emotions into animals has into animals and have those emotions expressed physically, this is almost impossible to do with live action because animals don't show emotions the same way humans do. So when you have a cartoon like art style, you can change the anatomy of your subject enough to where these emotions are more easily conveyed. But again, that's not saying this movie doesn't look beautiful. I do agree with you on that front. This is
no, and I agree with what you're saying.
Any high watermark is gorgeous.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. With animation, you're able to kind of contort the face. You're able to emote and express. And when you try to keep it bound to reality, like lions can't speak. They can't open their mouth and move their lips in that way. So when you force them to do that, to achieve some level of anthropomorphized sort of humanism, it also robs them of their realism. And you kind of trade one for the other, emotion for realism. And it's a delicate trade that I don't think this or the 2019 version did correctly. I will say this version bends it a little bit more to the point where you actually do see some facial emoting, whereas in 2019, it looked like they're just dead behind the eyes. In this movie, at least, there's like, oh, I can actually see some humanistic tendencies in their face. It kind of brings me out of the realism, but it felt like maybe in that respect, I like this one better than the original remake.
Mm.
If I'm making any sense.
No, totally. No, 100% agree with you on that. Where I kind of disagree with you on one of the points you brought up is I think that this story, while, yes, it is original, is such a basic and bland story. Yeah. I've seen it done time after time. If you told me that this was an AI-generated script, I would totally believe it because I felt no heart while watching this film. I didn't like any of the songs. I hated the villain song. I thought it was actually kind of cringe-worthy how bad it was. The constant cutting back and forth between Timon and Pumbaa, it really hindered the flow of the story, in my opinion. I think that I found those moments to not be that funny. I would have been happy with bookends and maybe one scene in the middle to get caught up on them, but it was just constantly throughout the movie, we kept cutting back to them for no reason. The movie's not about them. I think that's the point I'm trying to make.
I would have been okay with it though, if it was. I was the most entertained by Timon and Pumbaa. I think Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner are the funniest part of this new franchise, and I could have just done the whole movie of them describing the movie we saw, and I think it would have been more entertaining.
Oh, you mean Lion King 1.5?
I was going to say, I kind of want to see a photoreal version of Lion King 1.5, because that, if you haven't seen it, is a brilliant, subversive little sidequel that borrows from, Guildenstern and
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah, and
it's Rosemere, Katz, and Guildenhog. Yes, yeah, that's exactly what
it is. Lion King 1.5 is not a better movie, but it's different and it's fun and it's original and it's unique. I kind of wish they did something like that where they're like, let's just take a little side thing. But yeah, I definitely agree, Andrew, that written by AI is not an unfair characterization of this cookie cutter plot. For my kids, at least, I don't think they care about that. And I think for the target demo for this movie, simple is fine. But yeah, it is not unique or novel in any way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. Cain and Abel, whatever.
Aaron, what you got?
So I'm going to blow your mind, both of your minds here, based on what you've said. I think the music is the only good part of the movie.
Really?
I think not all of it. The first song, Malele, I think it's called, is forgettable and certainly doesn't compare to Circle of Life and what's going on in the first one. However, the song about being brothers is really catchy to me.
I kind of like the brothers one.
I loved We Go Together. I thought We Go Together was beautiful.
Is that the Sarabi Mufasa song?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was actually a really good song.
And then the third one I really, really liked was Tell Me It's You. All three of those songs where he's been saying it wasn't him that, you know, did something in the movie, and she's like, just tell me it's you. And it has this kind of underlying double meaning, which is really interesting. And it's there's some beautiful harmonies in that. And then there's even this dissonance that resolves to harmony at like the perfect lyrical. I don't know. There's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in the music. This is not a surprise to me. It's Lin-Manuel. Like he knows how to do this stuff. I just would say, you know, hearing both of you not like the music was a surprise to me because it was not the only thing. I do think it's beautiful, like you guys said. But it was one of the only things I came out of the movie going, oh, at least like my wife and I listened to the soundtrack all the way home. We were like, oh, you know, this is at least had, you know, good music to listen
to. I'll have to give it another listen to really form an opinion. It's hard for me to love a song on first listen. And with Lion King, the original, I've had 30 years to steep in it. I will say that I don't want to say I didn't like the songs. I just, they weren't as memorable or as catchy as the stuff that Elton John and Hans Zimmer did 30 years ago.
I absolutely agree with that. And I would say even Moana is this way. Moana, the first time I heard it, wasn't catchy, but it was good. And then the more I listened to it, the more it revealed itself. You know, I just think Lin-Manuel, Hamilton's the same way. Like, you listen to Hamilton the first time, you're like, oh, there's some cool stuff going on there. But it's not like I'm, you know, ready to sing it or hum it or, you know, those kind of things.
Well, it's just,
well, no, well, but a lot of what Lin-Manuel does is rhythmically like that. And that kind of rhythmic cadence is a little harder to call like catchy. You know what I mean? So I think there's a little bit of that going on here. So I did like the music. I did think it was beautiful. I did want to address a couple other things that you guys talked about with the animation style. I said this in 2019. I will say it again here, which is The Lion King is a story told in a way that the animation is a reason it works.
Yes.
Right? Because you can animate the animals doing different things. You know, once you make it photorealistic, you change the tone because it becomes more serious. I felt this tonal thing even more in this one, because of the shift from Timon and Pumbaa and that whole storytelling thing to then this really serious, dark, you know, brother's betrayal thing that's going on. And it just feels like the movie doesn't know if it wants to be a gritty, realistic Lion King movie or if it wants to be the animated one, you know? And that's just, I think that's a hard thing for this movie to do, and I think it fails at finding the balance of those tones. I for one love the Lion King 1.5, love Timon and Pumbaa being, you know, Deadpool and talking to the camera and, you know, being whatever. But in a movie like this, it doesn't work. I don't think they work in this movie. Those were the most distracting parts of this movie.
Yes.
When they're talking about Disney rides and residuals and, you know, what, like they're Deadpooling it up in this otherwise, you know, kind of actually real world we're supposed to be investing in. It just all that stuff broke the universe for me a little bit. And I get it, they're that way in the original, but you can be that way in the original, just like Robin Williams can be the genie in the original, because it's an animated thing that has that tone built into it, you know, that kind of psychologically, as we see it. So that stuff didn't work for me. And one of the other primary things that didn't work for me is I felt this is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it. And I think you're going to know what I mean. I felt the retconning in this movie of different things we know from the original. And it's like, oh, that's how that happened. Or, oh, that's how, oh my goodness. It was so forced and in your face. I thought it was going to be the opposite, because there's a moment early on where there's a very subtle reference to the original Lion King.
I thought it was kind of beautiful.
It was beautiful early on, and it was subtle. And then they did it again at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And it was like, why? You had this beautiful, subtle bookmark, but you're just like, you don't trust the audience to get that's what you're doing, so you do it again?
At the risk of this time,
you make it more forced?
At the risk of exposing myself as completely ignorant, which subtle clue are you referring to?
I'll just call it hand-holding.
Yeah, since this is,
Yeah.
This isn't a video, so I can do this, and nobody's going to see what I'm doing right now. This is the great.
No, it was. It was great. There was good. There was echoes of thematic importance, and I clocked that straight away, and I loved that moment. And it had such a duality to it that gave more power to the original film, which I think is the mark of a good sequel.
Correct.
And maybe I'm just kind of seeing the positives here. I don't disagree that Timon and Pumbaa were out of place tonally, but I laughed the most with them. So I was just like, give me more of that because I'm enjoying that.
And just throw
but you're not wrong. It does feel like it's another film. But I was enjoying that other film, so I was okay with it. This game, no,
I totally get it. And to be clear, just so I'm clear on what I'm saying about that first moment, I thought the movie was going to be really subtle and great at this stuff because of that moment, and then everything else it did felt forced to me and in your face in a way that's like, oh, do you get it? Do you see what happened there? The earthquake made a thing that you know. Do you get it? Like, you know, it just, I found it all so annoyingly like in your face that it really started to bother me. And the movie is full of this stuff, just full of these references and
Not everything has to be explained.
Yeah.
What were some other references? Because it's been a while since I've seen either version of The Lion King, so maybe I was missing some of these Easter eggs. I will say, though, there's the moment with Pride Rock is one my seven-year-old got. And she's like, oh, my God. She literally did the DiCaprio from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah. She pointed at the screen and was like, that's the thing I know. And for her, that was... You know, her media literacy is in its infancy. So for her to kind of clock metaphorical allegories and similarities and things like that was important. And I'm clearly teaching her well that she's kind of seeing things before they happen and recognizing like, oh, he's going to be that character. And it's like, good, you're paying attention. But I don't know if that's a great mark of a film that it works for seven-year-olds. Like that's the intellectual level we're playing with.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's important that you bring this up because I was going to talk about this. This is not the only example this year of a movie I watch and go, oh, we're just making movies for kids again. That's okay. That's fine. I kind of, my movie literacy grew up with Pixar that was both, you know, supremely deep and powerful and meaningful, and also kids could laugh and enjoy. You know, the same thing.
That dual track narrative where the adults and the children are entertained and intellectually stimulated in parallel for different reasons. And that's really good writing that only Pixar and a few other franchises and studios have been able to accomplish.
But I don't even know that they're wrong in moving in. When I say they, I mean movie studios moving back to this idea of making movies for children and that parents are chaperones. And if, as long as they smile and laugh a couple times, it doesn't have to make you cry. It doesn't have to get into your soul. It doesn't have to be super deep or, you know, philosophical or, you know, cinematically poetic or whatever.
It can just be
a fun movie for kids. It can just be a simple, fun movie for kids. That's what Moana 2 was. That's one of the other ones I'm mentioning. Moana 2 is just a simple kids movie. I would say Super Mario Brothers movie falls into this category as well. Just a fun time. Take the family. The kids are going to love it. It's a pretty terrible movie, honestly, if you're talking about like what it means to make cinema. But, you know, but that's not always what we're talking about. And I think it's important to know that there can be movies made for different audiences that... and that includes children. And I think at the end of the day, this feels like a children's movie, which is weird when it gets as dark as it does. Because The Lion King, as much as it could be enjoyed by kids, I think was deeper, was meaningful, you know, more meaningful, was something that could impact you as an adult. And I just didn't feel that here. And a part of the reason is mentioned by Andrew already. I just think everything is basic. Everything is the simplest way to tell this story. And From the moment Taka is introduced, you know the entire movie. If you know, if you know anything about basic storylines,
three-act structure. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. You know who that is. You know what their name is. You know how they're going to get their name, and it's not a Flerken. And you know everything about that character. So anyways, as my grumpy old man who wants to go feel things and cry, I just go, just so annoyed at all this stuff. you know.
What were some of the other? So. What were some of the other Easter eggs and things that you noticed?
Oh, I'd have to watch it again and specifically pull them out. I didn't write down a list or anything. I just remember feeling every few minutes. Oh, I see what you're doing. You don't have to wink quite so hard at me. Like I get it. I'd have to watch it again and just like write them down when they happen. But
I caught a few, but I didn't feel like it was. I actually had the thought in my head like halfway through, like, oh, I'm glad they're not like beating the prequel drum of like here. Oh, your name will be Han Solo because you're traveling. Like, I'm glad they didn't like, but they eventually kind of did.
I was going to say that's exactly what they did.
They did though,
especially at the end.
But like 30, 40 minutes in, I'm like, oh, I'm glad it's not just here's how you get your name and here's why Pride Rock is called this. And here's about like the light that like I'm glad they weren't over explaining everything we know later or giving. They could have very easily dropped a lot of like lines of dialogue that were just overt references to songs and music. I was half expecting at one point Sarobi and Mufasa to be like, well, can you feel it? Can you feel what? The love. Like, I was half expecting them to have a line of dialogue that just very overtly references Elton John lyrics. And I'm glad they didn't go that far, but they went far enough.
So you mentioned one that was possibly the most annoying for me.
Rafiki?
No, although that's another one. You mean the staff moment or the different staff, one?
I was go more along the lines of like quoting things that were said in both the the original one and the 2019 one. I'm like, okay, we get it. You don't have to say such line for the 15,000th time.
And the one they said the most that really annoyed me for even a different reason that I think is maybe the most valid criticism I'm about to give of this movie is everything the light touches. The way this movie uses everything the light touches is a disaster in my opinion, because it takes this beautiful moment that Mufasa had with Simba in the original, movie about what it means to be a, protector of everything. And it makes its origin story fascism. It's so terrible.
You're not completely wrong.
So like you're telling me that after all this time, the message he chooses to emotionally pass on to his child is something the most evil creature he ever met said to him about his selfishness and greed? Like, I don't know. It felt again like, that line is said maybe four or five times in the movie. They keep saying it. And it just felt like there was a lot of that where it was like, okay, I get it. I get it. And sometimes, and especially in this case, I'm like, I get it, but I don't get it. Like that makes things worse. I guarantee you I am overthinking it. It is a fun little kids movie. Go have fun.
I saw it with an almost 5 and an almost 7 year old and they really liked it and they were laughing and they were sufficiently thrilled and a wee bit terrified at certain moments. And I think it's just a straight like kids adventure action movie.
Yeah.
It works.
Yep.
But I think as a Lion King movie, it does not live up to the very lofty reputation. As a musical, I didn't really dig it. And I'm still on the fence like you, Andrew, about this. The entire conceit of photoreal animals. Like, what are we doing? That's neither realistic or emotional. It's this weird betwixt two worlds that just turns me off in an icky way. And I kind of wish they just animated it like completely. with actual pencils and crayons or whatever they use. Probably not crayons.
Pencils and crayons.
Probably in colored pencils. I don't know what they use.
It's not Uncanny Valley because it is almost photorealistic.
Yeah, it's not quite that. But it's like this, you get this feeling like,
there needs to be a new, like, very specific phrase for trying to anthropomorphize animals that are photorealistic. So somebody come up with something.
But there is more depth, nuance, emotion, gravitas in the movie Flow, which I don't know if you guys have seen, but it's about a cat. It's about a cat. There are no humans in this movie. And you get more emotion out of that cat just being a cat. It doesn't have to talk. It doesn't have to make facial expressions. It just is a cat. And you can still get the emotion out of it. The problem is you're trying to translate one language to another language when the second language just doesn't have the same vocabulary. It just doesn't have the same words. And so it gets confusing and muddled and it's difficult.
I'm trying to think why a movie like Homeward Bound works and this doesn't, which uses actual real animals. Is that just great casting then? Is that all it is? Is that the big difference? Great casting to where the voice performances are so good that you don't even... that you can feel the emotions through them? Is that the difference?
Michael J. Fox and Sally Field, and I forget who plays Shadow. It's not Sam Elliott.
The older gentleman. I can't remember his
name. Someone like Sam Elliott. And they're great, but I think that the thing is their mouths aren't moving. Because if you've ever seen the Air Bud sequels, all the Buddies films, which I have regretfully watched all of them, it was a personal punishment of mine a couple years ago during COVID. Let's watch all 24 movies in the Air Bud universe. There are 24 of them. In some of the sequels, they decide to let the dogs talk, and the dogs actually move their dog mouths. And it's weird, and it's creepy, and I don't like it. If the dogs just talked internalized, or if we heard Dudley Moore's voiceover, like in Milo and Otis, that would be different, and I would kind of be on board, and I'd be able to follow. But when you start moving their face in a way that's unnatural, it takes you out of that element, and it's frustrating, because I think you can make it work, and like you were saying, Aaron, you look at a movie like WALL-E from Pixar, it's a robot that can only say his own name and barely that, and yet you feel so much pathos for that little plucky robot after just the 20-minute mark, just because they're able to tell a story visually and emotionally, and The Lion King is trying to translate, you know, languages on top of...
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it, there's a disconnect that they didn't solve in 2019, and they got, I think, a little better here, but they're still falling short, unfortunately.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on Mufasa, The Lion King? Anybody have one last thing?
No post-credit scene.
I wonder what they're going to do next. Not necessarily for this franchise, but what live action, what photoreal follow-up are we going to get next?
Lilo and Stitch.
A sequel to an existing one.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like another Aladdin
Are we going to get Aladdin 2 with Will Smith, or an Aladdin prequel where it shows him how he became a genie? Probably.
I'm down.
Who knows?
I'm down. I thought you were talking about the same problem of, you know, photorealism not speaking the same language of animation, and I think the answer to that is How to Train Your Dragon. I think we're going to have some of these same conversations probably when the quote-unquote live-action How to Train Your Dragon comes out. But
you're not wrong.
I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about it.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All right, so let's move on to the best ever challenge. Best ever movies, best ever African movies, movies set mostly in Africa. We'll each do a couple nominations here. I think we've probably got enough to each do four. I think we can each do four. Let's each do four. We'll get 12 on the board. All right. Kick us off, John. What's your first nomination in this category?
I don't think it's going to win, but I want to give a shout out to Sahara from, 2008 with Matthew McConaughey. It is like a modern day Indiana Jones. I'm certain we've talked about it on the show, 2005. Mm-hmm. I'm certain we've talked about it on the show before. It is a sort of an underseen and underappreciated film that bombed at the box office when it came out. McConaughey, Penelope Cruz, and Steven Zahn. It is a great, like, old school throwback adventure film with cannons and explosions and treasure hunts and there's a gunfight on a boat and a train chase. And the guy gets the girl at the end, passionate kiss on the beach as we roll to credits. Awesome needle drops. William H. Macy and Rainn Wilson do some great supporting turns. And it's one of those movies my wife and I think we saw on a date in theaters, like opening weekend, and nobody else was there. And we're like, wow, this movie is great. How come nobody else wants to see it? And it's the kind of thing, like, I wish we got more just classic Hollywood, you know, swashbuckling kind of films. And this is a fun one. It's not deep. It's not unique, but it's a ton of fun.
Sahara, starring Matthew McConaughey. I don't think I've seen this.
Really? There you go. My point is, it's underappreciated and underseen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ormsby, what do you want to nominate?
I am going to emphatically nominate Blood Diamond.
Yep.
This is in my top 10 movies of all time.
Whoa.
I know. It's number 10, but you know, for top 10 movies of all time, I think that the performances on this are great. I think that Jemin Hansu is just acting circles around Leo DiCaprio, and I think
which is saying a lot.
But there's just something so real about Jemin Hansu's acting in this movie that just feels so authentic to what an actual person would go through. Jennifer Connelly's great. It's directed by Edward Zwick, who I love. I think he's such an underappreciated director. Yeah, there's just a lot of good things to say about Blood Diamond. So I'm going to, like I said, emphatically nominate it.
Nice. I had it on my list as well.
Yeah.
I looked it up. I have seen Sahara. I gave it 2 stars. That's how much I remember
it. Oh, no.
So I probably owe it a rewatch if I can't even remember anything about it.
Just turn your brain down a little bit. That's all.
Yes, thank you. It's not the first time that has been requested of me. I will go with Black Hawk Down as my first nomination. With that happening in Egypt, right? I can't remember. Maybe it's not, but it is Africa.
Somalia.
Okay, there you go. Anyways, great movie. We've mentioned it many times before. Lots of you know, cast in it that were kind of getting their big break around that time and have gone on to, you know, be big names. And it's just an intense and powerful watch. So check out Black Hawk Down. It is my first nomination. John, what is your next nom?
I'm glad you guys are picking movies from that I haven't seen in 20 years, because it's going to be a lot of stuff to rewatch this holiday break here. Let's go with District 9, South Africa.
Yeah.
Definitely counts. This was Neil Blomkamp. What's his name?
Blomkamp.
This was, I think, his first film or just like his breakout film? Either way, I saw this basically blind. I didn't know what to expect. I just heard it was good. I went and I saw it, I think, opening weekend. And again, same thing. Like, I don't remember a lot of people in the theater. It kind of snuck up on a lot of us, I think, that summer. And it knocked my socks off. This was an incredible film. I think it holds up really well. It's like a low-budget sci-fi allegory, political violence and class warfare and aliens invading South Africa. And then they're in concentration camps and they're treated like immigrants. It's a really powerful stuff. It's great modern sci-fi storytelling with that like gritty found footage-y kind of style and gloss, or lack of gloss, I should say. It's great. Another movie I haven't seen in a long time. I want to rewatch it. But yeah, that's a brilliant picture.
It has such a great origin story too of how that movie came to be, because originally a lot of that footage, Peter Jackson was going to direct the Halo movie a long, long, long time ago. And he backed out of the production, but a lot of the visual effects that they created were going to go to waste. So Neil Blomkamp, if I'm pretty sure, bought a lot of the subjects, like the digital aspects, and he just repurposed them for District 9.
Brilliant.
So brilliant. It has a really cool origin story, too.
That's cool. Very nice. Ormsby, what's your next nom?
Well, I got to steal one from you, Aaron, because I know this one's on your list. I want to go with the animated film The Prince of Egypt.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. What just an astounding film. The music, we were just talking about Lion King and not having amazing, John and I's opinions, amazing music. I think we can all three emphatically, adamantly say that some of the songs in Prince of Egypt are just some of the best songs in any
best songs ever. Yeah.
It's just, and it's a song that, you know, a lot of people, or it's a story a lot of people know. Great animation, great voice performances. Yeah, I love The Prince of Egypt.
Yep, looking forward to the live action remake of The Prince of Egypt.
No, you're not, because they already did it with Christian Bale, and it was horrible. Yes.
All right, my next nomination, now that Andrew has stolen the one I was going to go with.
Yep, I knew it.
Is going to be Eye in the Sky.
Is it the one with Helen Mirren? The one about drone warfare?
Mm-hmm.
That came out like 4 or 5 years ago?
Does it technically take place in Africa? Because I think that for the most part, they're in England just watching footage in Africa.
Do you want to veto it?
No, I'm not going to veto. I'm just so mad that I didn't think of this movie. So that's why I'm just throwing shade at you.
No, it's an interesting distinction. Yeah, the story is all happening in Africa. Mm-hmm. Like the actual plot of what's going down, like the trauma of what's going down is happening in Africa. But you're right, the whole point of the movie in many ways is that it's not in Africa. It's, you know, the decisions are taking place in England. It's part of what makes the movie so amazing. So I'm fine swapping something out if you don't feel like it fits.
Like I said, I was just mad that I didn't think of it, because I would have nominated it. Such a good movie.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's sneaky good. I have seen it. Yeah. It's sneaky good, because it looks like, not to be derogatory, but in sort of pessimistic, but it looks like just another dime a dozen streaming, Netflix film. It looks very familiar. It looks like, oh, it's just another one of those like modern war films. There's gonna be guns and explosions and some political intrigue, and they probably made it for $30 million with a couple of people that I've heard of from. Yeah, it looks cheap. It looks, but like the movie is so much better than the poster or the tagline would represent. Because I just flipped through one night. I think we watched it on Amazon Prime or something. I'm like, I guess this is okay. And then we my wife and I both loved this one. And I was like, where was this hiding? Because I didn't find it until just a couple of years ago. And I think that's probably the case with a lot of us, that we did not see it originally.
You know, it seems to me like there's just, for some reason, there are some movies that have a harder time breaking through to public consciousness. Because, and you see this as somebody who for, 12 years now has spent my time telling people about amazing movies they may not have heard of, right? Like, that's kind of part of one of the things that I do. And Eye in the Sky in 2015 was one of those movies. I was yelling about Eye in the Sky in 2015, how amazing it was. But it just kind of falls to deaf ears because it's the title, like you said, how it looks or whatever. Like, glad he liked it, but I got other stuff I want to see, you know, first.
Forget
and then,
this guy.
You know, who is this guy? He doesn't know what I like.
It's one of those movies, after you watch it, you're mad at yourself for like, why did I put this off for so long?
I actually, there, you know, on some of the other podcasts I do, I have a category of movie you will be kicking yourself you didn't watch sooner 5 years from now. Like that, that is, you know, and this is that kind of movie. And there are always a couple of them every year. And I'm getting to the place where I can almost identify them. Like I can almost go, you know, what are these movies going to be?
This is going to be the hidden gem 5 years from now.
Yeah, kind of thing. And Eye in the Sky is definitely that. So, glad you guys like it too. John, I think you're up next. What's your next nom?
We haven't talked about it yet, so we might as well get to it. Casablanca is the GOAT. I mean, that's just, that takes place in Africa. I got the poster on my wall here. I mean, you look at AFI, American Film Institute's top 100 movie quotes of all time. They kind of stopped counting after the mid-90s, but of the top 100 quotes up until the mid-90s, six of them are from
like
this one film
or something.
Six from Casablanca alone, and three just from the last scene on the runway with Bogart and what's her name, Ingrid. A brilliant film, just one of the absolute greatest, most powerful love stories, and the setting and the dialogue and the filmography, the cinematography rather. It's just gorgeous. It's one of those things you hear about, like Citizen Kane. It's like, oh, well, it's Casablanca. It's just, it's the artsy movie. It's the old classic. It's dusty. It's black and white. I've heard it before. I know what I'm going to get. It's going to be a boring film forced to watch in film school. But it is so much better than than all of that. And it's like, oh, I'm glad my teacher forced me to watch this when I was 17 because it's incredible. And then when I rediscovered it as an adult in my 30s, I was like, this is still incredible. This is that they were cooking with the ingredients everyone else had, but they came up with a meal that was like 30 years ahead of its time. Like, it just feels so fresh and clever. And yeah, Casablanca is a stone cold classic for a reason.
Nice. Ormsby, what's your next nom?
Well, even though this movie got a Razzie nomination, I can't help but nominate one of my favorite movies of all time and the first R-rated movie I ever saw.
Mm.
The Ghost in the Darkness.
Nice.
I love this movie. It's so fun. I have done a lot of like reading up on the Lions of Tsavo. For those of you who don't know, this is based on a true story of these two lions who attack this railway station. And the movie definitely is a movie version of what actually happened. But if you actually like go and look at the statistics of like how many people these lions killed, it's in the hundreds.
This movie is a prequel to Kraven, right?
Yes, yeah, so that's exactly what it is. It's the prequel to Kraven. Michael Douglas is chewing scenery in this. He actually helped direct it, I think. He didn't get credited, but I think that he was, you know, helping behind the scenes with that. Val Kilmer's the one who got the Razzie nomination because his Irish accent was so terrible. But if you look beyond that, I think it's a great movie.
Yeah, no, that's another film that has a really distinct and really great vibe to it. Like, this is Victorian era Africa, right? So everyone, all the white people have British accents and all the natives don't want anything to do with them. And the music in this, Jerry Goldsmith provided the score, one of my favorite composers. I don't want to say one of his best scores, but I think probably one of his least listened to. And there's some gems on that soundtrack. And yeah, this is a great film.
I'm so glad you brought up the soundtrack because it is one of my favorites. It really is so good.
Same if you did you First Contact.
You can definitely have fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. You can definitely have fun with Ghosts in the Darkness, for sure. that's what I'll say.
Yeah.
I see. I'm up next, and I'm going to throw The Lion King on here.
Yeah.
I think it's worth putting on the list. I know it's kind of the topic of the day, but it is a different movie than we're talking about, and it is a stone cold classic. And for good reason. So I'll throw that on the nomination list. John, what do you got for your final nomination?
I'm going to throw another just shallow but super fun modern blockbuster, 1999's The Mummy, starring Brandon Fraser. Mm-hmm. I love The Mummy, and I'm not even going to apologize or qualify it. It is not, I think, cinematic excellence, but it is so much fun and so rewatchable, and that's important. To have good rewatchable fun. Love The Mummy.
It's who doesn't ton of fun.
Who doesn't love The Mummy, honestly? Yeah. I think we peaked as a civilization right around then. So
that's right. No one doesn't love The Mummy. Everybody loves it.
Yeah.
Ormsby, what's your final nomination?
Well, I'm gonna go with a movie that's equally as fun and lovable. That's Hotel Rwanda.
Oh, man.
I have not seen it.
Vibes.
I'm sorry. This is the most depressing movies ever made.
Is it Dory that's like, good feelings gone? Yeah. that was that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, good feelings gone. But such a powerful movie. I think that Don Cheadle and Joaquin Phoenix are just astounding in this. Terry George does not shy away from the reality. And I'm sure it was so much worse than what they could have shown on screen, but a very powerful and a very important film too.
Yes. I think it's amazing and I think it's worth a watch. Everybody should watch Hotel Rwanda. It is just kind of one of those. Yeah, it is. It's a homework movie, right? And I know those are hard sometimes, like to gear yourself up to watch movies that feel like, oh, I'm going to have to do some heavy lifting in this movie. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some weight to it. And I found in my own life the same thing where it's like, okay, I've been putting this off. You know, everybody says that I need to watch it, but it's heavy. Okay, I'll do it. I always feel overall rewarded at the end. And by the end, I'm like, why do I fear, like, not fear, but like, why do I put off watching these movies? Because the experience, though it has darkness and though it has weight to it and those kind of things, when you're through with it, you realize how important it is that you have seen it and experienced it and found empathy in it. And, you know, all those things that movies are amazing at. So this is kind of one of those. If it's been on your maybe someday list when I'm in the mood, just throw it on. Just honestly, just throw it on and just start watching it. It's, you know, it's worth it. And you'll understand at the end that it was a good watch. You know,
Andrew, before you got on the call here, I was telling Aaron that just this week I was in the mood for let's do like a homework watch, right? A movie that's important, but not necessarily you got to lift my spirits. And I was so close to pulling the trigger on Hotel Rwanda, but I took so long to decide. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to fall asleep. Let me put on a shorter movie. And I ended up watching Night and Fog, which is a French documentary about the Holocaust and the concentration camps. That's only like 35 minutes long, right? It's a very short film, powerful and heartbreaking, but it's short. And I'm like, I'll watch that tonight and come back to Hotel Rwanda in a couple weeks. So that was a couple weeks ago. And I think this is a good coincidence that maybe I should give that a pass again.
Wow.
There you go. All right. I guess I have to make a decision here. Man, there's some good stuff here. Let's see. Well, I'll get to mention stuff at Audible Mentions, I guess. Let's go with Queen of Katwe, because I think this is one of the
chess movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And it's another one of those that I think falls enough under the radar that I want to just give it a little bit of a bump, a little bit of a shout out above honorable mentions. Because if you haven't seen it, I think you're really going to enjoy this movie. It's kind of got some sports movie formula to it. Like, there are a lot of these types of movies that Disney has made. In fact, you could probably find at least one every year where they're doing this amazing true life sports, you know, kind of thing that happened that you never heard about.
Definitely.
Kind of thing. And this is one of the better ones, in my opinion. Although lots of those kind of movies are actually really, really good. What was the one with John Hamm that when he found baseball players playing
the million dollar arm?
Million Dollar Arm, like that's another example of this kind of thing. But Queen of Katwe takes place in Africa and yes, follows a girl there as she learns how to play chess and become successful doing it, and tries to escape the poverty that she's in. So yeah, check it out. It is on Disney Plus, of course, because it is a Disney movie. But yeah, I thought that'd be worth a mention. So we'll get that in the official noms.
I will check it out. Thank you.
Before we make our final choice here, what are some of the other honorable mentions you guys wanted to throw out there, John? What else did you have in the hopper?
Speaking of sports movies that follow a formula, this one's not particularly great, but The Air Up There, where Kevin Bacon has to go to Africa to teach basketball to the natives, that's fun. There's some good moments in that. Very formulaic and very 90s, but it's good. The Gods Must Be Crazy is a is a movie that I want to love more because the premise and the cleverness of it is so sharp, and it's a great parody and it is great satire. I just left feeling like, oh, there's more potential on the table to go even further with this concept. But The Gods Must Be Crazy is a great
It's so shoestring, you know, like it's such a shoestring kind of movie that you kind of have to give it a little grace.
Yeah, and I do, but, for sure. It's very good, yeah. And I would definitely recommend it. But the whole time I'm watching it going like, oh man, if they just went a little further here, if they had more money to do this. And
yes,
two more, another Bogart film, African Queen, with Katharine Hepburn, a classic, another great, I think it's also on the AFI 100 list, and Zulu with Michael Caine, which came out, I think, in the 70s, about a big battle with the Zulu tribe in, I want to say, the 1880s. Great movie there as well.
Andrew, do you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, I had a couple, and it's not my intention to nominate movies that are just insanely depressing, but here we go. The Last King of Scotland.
Yeah.
Beast of No Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, here's one that I was... I don't know why I thought it was a different movie, but this movie actually is kind of hopeful and kind of inspiring. Invictus. I actually enjoy Invictus from Clint Eastwood.
I haven't seen any of those films.
Yeah, they're all worth a watch. Those are all good shout-outs. I recently, for the first time, watched Tears of the Sun.
What did you think of it? Bruce Willis film from 2002?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bruce Willis, Cole Hauser, Monica Bellucci. I really liked it. I wouldn't say like it immediately made my top 200 of all time or anything, but I was surprised, you know, that I enjoyed it as much as I did. So I throw that one out. And then technically, Captain Phillips takes place in Africa as well.
So yes. Born of Africa.
Yeah, it kind of so does. I wanted to throw that out there too.
Such a good movie.
Since that one's so good. All right. So here are the nominees. Sahara, Blood Diamond, Black Hawk Down, District 9, The Prince of Egypt, Eye in the Sky, Casablanca, The Ghost in the Darkness, The Lion King, The Mummy, Hotel Rwanda, and Queen of Katwe. Now, there are at least three or four of those that I think nobody would be mad at if they won. What are your thoughts, guys? You know,
well, like I said, I was adamant about Blood Diamond. I don't know where you guys stand on it, but like I said, it's a top 10 film for me.
Blood Diamond is very Blood Diamond, I think, was my second behind Casablanca. Okay.
Blood Diamond's good. I would have five different movies above Blood Diamond in this list, probably. But we can keep it in mind as we kind of discuss. John,
the other big one. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to see what John's thinking.
Yeah.
Casablanca for me just is, it clears everything else on this list by quite a bit. Even The Lion King, which would be.
I hate to be that guy, John. I'm just not up on Casablanca. I think whenever you were talking about having, you know, to sit in your school and watch like mandatory like films that you thought were a little bit pretentious, this was the film for me that I just had to sit there and sit through.
So have you ever come back to it? Have you ever come back to it on your own terms and rewatched it or no?
I have not. And you know what? I probably should because it was one of those mandatory watches.
That's what made the difference for me is I liked it and appreciated it as a teenager. But then when I watched it in my mid-30s, I was like, holy crap, this is incredible. Especially since in the intervening 20-something years, I had familiarized myself with all of its contemporaries. I had seen all of the other black and white war movies of the 1930s and 40s. And I'm like, I'm kind of familiar now with what this style is and what this period of movie, what this period of time created in cinema. And then you see Casablanca and it's like, oh my gosh, this is out of time and space. Like this feels like a shot from above. Like they just came up with a movie so much better than everything else in that space at that time. But I didn't have that perspective at 17, 18.
I was going to be willing to go with Casablanca if you two both
loved it that much. So what do you like?
I think Casablanca is amazing, and also I don't enjoy watching it. it's like I get it. But it's Casablanca.
That's fair.
I don't. You know, my mind is going to be drawn to the animated ones. Prince of Egypt, Lion King. I think are both decent choices.
The Lion King was like my second pick.
Black Hawk Down is amazing. There's lots in there.
How do we feel about The Mummy though?
I don't think we're putting The Mummy as the best ever African movie amongst this list.
But I'd be very fun. Okay. It's so fun. I'd be very okay with The Lion King. It is it's legitimately Disney has done 64 animated features in their quote unquote animated canon. Lion King is either the number one or the number two movie for me. And that kind of depends on my mood, but it's,
I agree. It is the number one animated film ever.
It is. It's interesting. It sounds like that's the way we're headed. Okay. If you guys are good with it, we'll call it The Lion King then.
It's a Lion King show. Hooray.
It is. Correct.
Can you feel the love?
Let's talk about the Broadway show next. So yeah, Lion King, the best ever movie that takes place mostly in Africa. Nobody mentioned Black Panther. Black Panther is a movie that took place in Africa, right? Is it just because it's a fictional universe? Or
Technically, you're not wrong. I think if we were talking about Stephen King movies, we would say they take place in Maine, even though Castle Rock is a fake place.
Well, even The Lion King is, you know what I mean? Like, it's not our Africa. As far as I know, the lions don't talk and sing.
The Pride Lands is not a real place.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Anyhow. There you go. Let's finish off with the final artifact. Let's talk a little bit about Carry On.
Ethan, today is a day that you're going to remember for a very long time, but if you handle it right, you're going to have a chance to forget it. Just relax, okay? An associate of mine is going to step into your line, and you are going to make sure that his bag clears the machine.
Listen, I work for the Department of Homeland Security.
That's like the janitor at NASA calling himself an astronaut. Let's cancel the text, or we execute your girlfriend.
An airport security officer races to outsmart a mysterious traveler, forcing him to let a dangerous item slip onto a Christmas Eve flight. This is a Netflix offering starring Jason Bateman and Taron Egerton that has a special place in Andrew's heart because it involves the TSA. And that is because his dad's a TSA agent. So you may have some insight for us. So let's start with you. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I liked it. I had a lot of fun with this movie.
All right. Sounds like a decent like. Jonathan?
I really liked it. No surprise.
Nice. Aaron?
3 for 3. High side of liked it. Yeah, this is a lot of fun. This movie's really fun. So, Jonathan, since you're the guest, why don't you start us off with some general thoughts?
I think first and foremost, it knows what it is and what it's trying to do. Yes. And it's not trying to break the mold. It is derivative of other movies we've seen before. It's Die Hard 2 meets Liberty Stand Still or The Phone Booth, right? You have the assassin in the earpiece commanding our hapless citizen, do bad things or else I'll do bad things to you or your loved ones. Like, we've seen that sort of trope before, and when it's handled well, it can be magic. And Jason Bateman here is so good at, like, reaching a gear that I don't think we've seen before, like a really creepy, really sinister, but like cold and deliberate and mechanical in the way he's absolutely psychotic in this in a great way. And Taron is so good, even with the fake American accent, he's so good at portraying that everyman kind of demeanor, and you want to root for him straight away, even though he's a bit of a screw up and he's not, you know, the most honest with himself, but it's like, I kind of like this guy. I want to root for him. And there's just a lot of different moving pieces to how he gets himself out of this jam. And you're in his shoes the whole way. And I love movies that force you as the viewer to suppose, okay, how would I handle this? How do I get word about that? How do I make a signal without the bad guys knowing it? And the whole time you're trying to game this out the same way Taron is. And I appreciated that the movie was pretty consistently like one step ahead of me, because I'm like, I don't know how they're going to get out of this one. And then they did. And I was really kind of on board with how much fun I was having. And it takes some turns in the third act that I wasn't expecting. And I appreciated that it kind of broke away from, I thought we were going to be kind of claustrophobically contained. And there's even a moment, I don't even think this is a spoiler, there's a moment only like a half an hour in where Jason Bateman and Taron meet each other. And I was like, oh, shoot. This, I thought we was going to be like a faceless Kiefer Sutherland type in Phone Booth, and we would never actually see him in the movie. But like, he actually shows up, and I was like, oh, okay, this is a much different story than I thought. And I really liked that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ormsby, some general thoughts.
I'm just going to echo a lot of the things you said because you stole a lot of my notes. I think that everyone understood the assignment with this film. Like you said, it's a high stakes action suspense film with a lot of tension. Great performances and a story that kept me invested. I think that's the biggest thing about this movie. I was invested. I cared about. I cared about, you know, who these people were. I could see myself loving this film if it wasn't so far-fetched in some areas. I think if it had been tightened up, it could have been a loved it for me. I've heard a lot of people online, just because, you know, like I said, I had my dad works in TSA, so a lot of people have been letting me know their feelings on this film. And a lot of the things that they've been saying to me is they feel like they've been comparing it to Die Hard. And I don't know if you guys have heard that comparison or not. Whether, you know, it's a Christmas movie or not.
I was making it to Die Hard 2, which is an important distinction, because Die Hard 2 takes place in an airport.
That's true. Oh, that's right. I haven't seen Die Hard 2 but once, so.
It's okay.
But, but I think that there are some areas that the story could have been tightened up a little bit. But for the most part, I just had fun. Like you said, Jason Bateman is very cold. If I had to pick one word out of all the words you used to describe him, cold would be just his demeanor.
He's just uncaring. And it was frightening. Like, oh my gosh, he really, he's going to murder a baby and he doesn't even flinch. Like, this is, wow, okay. There's no negotiating with a man that sort of is sociopathic.
I was afraid that character was going to be one note. I thought that cold was all he was going to be. But he showed some range as the movie progressed that I was like, ooh, okay, so this is a really well-thought-out character. And yes, Taron Egerton is great, too. No hint of his accent at all.
I thought both of them were amazing. And I thought it's not a two-hander technically. You know, there's plenty of cast in this movie. And to call it a two-hander would be a disservice to Daniel Deadwyler specifically, who's also great in this movie. But Taron and Jason are so good in this movie that I think their performances alone would have made this a fun ride, right? You add to their performances that, and Jonathan, you touched on this, that it is so well constructed that you feel like there's a thing that can happen in these types of movies where the movie thinks your set of facts and your set of knowledge is different than it actually is. They don't have a good awareness of where the audience is and what they know. This movie knows exactly where the audience is, knows exactly what they know, and knows exactly when to give them the information that they need next. And that's a tricky thing to do. And the movie, the script does it really, really well. The structure of how things are laid out. There are several moments where you as an audience member realize what's happening just as you're supposed to realize what's happening. And that's, you know, that's really great.
I was going to say, interrupting on that point, there's a bunch of moments where you're thinking to yourself, well, why doesn't he just try this? And then like a second later, he tries that exact thing.
He tries it.
He did think of everything. And so I love that. At least my personal experience was I was kind of lockstep with where the movie was in terms of plotting and laying out exposition.
And that's part B to this whole thing with what this movie does so well, which is that the other distraction that can happen in a movie like this is, well, why is the character being so dumb, right? Like, why would they do this? Or like you mentioned, why aren't they doing this? And I didn't feel that in this movie. It always felt like Taron was, you know, doing the things I thought of, or sometimes doing things I hadn't thought of. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's really smart. Okay, nicely done. Good try. And then the bad guy wasn't dumb either. Jason Bateman wasn't dumb either. And so it was like, you know, a real battle of wits and wills. And it just, it really works that way. So the movie is so good at, you know, keeping you undistracted and keeping you invested in these characters that it's just a great ride. It's just a lot of fun to see what's going to happen, how, you know, you know the good guy's gonna win. You know how movies work. You know, there are, you know, one out of every 1,000 movies maybe that would go the other way, but you know, that doesn't keep you from being invested in how and why because of how good the movie is. So yeah, it felt like it had enough of the kineticism. Is that a word even? The kinetic energy of a movie from like the 80s or something, but had the sensibility of a modern film. And that's, you know, a really great balance. I do want to say the Alina Cole stuff, the Daniel Deadwyler stuff,
Detective. Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The LAPD.
Was it a PD? I couldn't remember. I think it was FBI or PD. Anyways, it's not important what initials her company goes by.
LAPD detective.
The detective. She also was smart and tough and doing, you know, impressive stuff. And I don't know, I felt like all around this movie just felt so well polished, which you don't often see in these more kind of straight to DVD feeling Netflix offerings sometimes. And this is a good one.
Two quick individual examples I want to call out. One is with that Elena Cole character, where our hero, when Taryn finally meets her, and you think, okay, there's a bunch of ways this could go. If they don't communicate properly, he's going to get arrested or she's going to get shot. And the way it's handled is such a great idea I hadn't even thought of, where he just distracts her long enough to get her out of his way. But while he's running away, he's just shouting specific exposition at her, like, that immediately telegraphs, I am who I say I am. I am not the bad guy. And here is the bad guy. And it was like, oh, that's so smart. Like, you're making an ally, but not slowing yourself down. Because in any other movie, that would be a whole act where he gets handcuffed. And now the next 20 minutes, he has to break out of jail from the good guys to help the good guys. Like, we've always seen those movies where the good guys are hampering themselves because they haven't communicated. Right. It takes them too long. And I'm like, I'm so glad they didn't bog down with that boring trope where the good guys that don't know each other yet don't trust each other. Like, no, just say what you need to say and keep running. And I loved that. And the other thing was Taryn's friend in the movie, Cinqua Walls, plays this character, Jason. He gets sort of dispatched from the narrative halfway through. And to your point, Andrew, I was like, oh, I kind of want to figure out what happened to Jason. Like, he got a bad rap in this. And I'm so glad, not to spoil much, but at the end of the movie, we find out what happens to him. And it's like, oh, good. I'm glad we got some closure, because I actually did care about these side characters and, like, what was going to happen to them, because they felt like lived-in people that didn't deserve what was happening to them. So I appreciate that we tied up loose ends to people I did care about.
And I like the fact that the movie didn't feel the need to turn Taron Egerton into John Wick, you know?
Yes.
Like, halfway through, it's like, who is this guy? Oh, let's look at his background. Oh, he's an ex-Navy SEAL who's, you know, now working DSA.
No, they kind of played into the fact that he was, an Academy dropout and maybe a bit lazy and apathetic about his life. Because there's a bunch of scenes where Bateman is sort of playing like, oh, I knew you weren't going to do anything because you're not the guy that stands up. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I like that they fed that into his character motivation. Like, this is the one time I'm going to actually, you know, stand up for myself. And his actions and abilities, more importantly, felt believable. Like, he wasn't just headshot, I'm saved. Like, no, this is a guy that is 5'9" and 160 pounds and probably couldn't take these guys if he wanted to. Like, he's struggling. He's out of his element here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts? Any one last things that you want to talk about, John?
To echo my point from the Mufasa movie, I would be okay if they did more of these movies. If it was an anthology style where it was like either psychotics trying to get through security through this way, or if Taryn's character now has more adventures in law enforcement or TSA. I think whoever made this movie, was it directed by Jean Collet Serra? If he has some more stuff on the horizon, I will check it out. This one really impressed me.
Do you have anything else, Mr. Ormsby?
I'm trying to look up what else they've directed. Oh, they directed Black Adam and Jungle Cruise. That's where we know them from.
Mm. I wonder if this was originally supposed to be The Rock in this movie.
That would not have been believable. I think that would have really ruined the tone wholesale.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, he also did Nonstop with Liam Neeson, The Shallows with Blake Lively. Like, those are...
I love that movie!
Yeah. And Nonstop's a really good, one of the better post-Taken Neeson pictures as well.
I think that out of all the movies of his that I've seen, I think this might be my favorite.
Yeah.
I think it's the most grounded. Even though my biggest complaint about this movie was there are some elements of this movie I felt were a little too ridiculous, out of all of his movies, I think this is the most grounded and realistic, and I appreciated it the most.
Well, I'll make that my one last thing. Did you notice anything as the son of a TSA agent that stood out to you?
He doesn't really talk about work other than a lot of people yelled at me today in line, you know.
Well, that was in the movie. That was definitely in the movie.
Yeah. So please, people, just try and understand. TSA are just trying to do their job. They're human beings too. Don't yell at my dad, please.
Don't yell at my dad.
Stop yelling at my dad.
There you go. That is Carry On, available to watch on Netflix. Well, we did it, guys. We managed to get a podcast through security and all the way onto the plane. Congratulations to everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thank you to John Paula for coming and hanging out with us again today and talking movies. John, say whatever words you want to say right now.
Go check out my YouTube channel, Movie Night, because in a couple weeks at the end of the year, I'm going to do my big wrap-up of all 450-something movies I watched in 2024. It's a fun dive into my Letterboxd stats page as I rattle off in very short order some of my favorites, highlights, lowlights, all the rest. YouTube.com/movie night.
There you go. Check that out. Thank you as well to our SifPop members. That's at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. You can check out all the details there. You can also connect with us through leaving comments or ratings or reviews wherever you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever that might be. You can email us if you like. That's feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so let them know about it. And that listening is easier than creating a precise mountainous snowdrift as a tiny bird. We will see you next time. I'm not sure if it'll be next week or a couple weeks, but I think our next episode will be
Nosferatu.
I think it'll be our most anticipated of 2025. Will be our next episode. So we'll see you guys for that one. Bye.
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 Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.